Good afternoon and welcome to our show. Today is a lovely gray, I would say the sad gloom that smiles of a gray day on a Tuesday evening. This is Julian Lampert coming into you with Lena Live. And normally I'm in the backstage with my mother, Lena Mumont, who hosts this show, and I have the pleasure of taking on the microphone today. I'd like also to thank the wonderful folks at BBS Radio, and I'm looking forward to having some regular radio appearances in the coming months, and I'll be in touch about that and hope that you'll stay tuned. And I was thinking a lot about the connection between our activity as artists. And when I say artists, I mean musicians, painters, writers, everyone, all of the above who create, and the connection between our creations and what is happening in the world that normally we do not associate with the arts, things like politics, economics, especially economics, I would say. And there's a challenge that we have as artists that's not just the challenges that society likes to impose on us, which is to be as distributed and commercialized as we can, which is certainly also very, very important. But that's important across the board. Any item that we want to sell or a service demands a commercial engine behind it. So that's not the point. The point is that as artists, we require a certain territory in which we are both protected and protected not in an isolated kind of way, but actually more in a time. In other words, it's more about the place that we have as creators in the place of time than in a place. And what I mean by that is that if we have even just 5 minutes to ourselves, and it doesn't matter where, that's the point, is that the place does not matter as much as having those 5 minutes to create. There is nothing that can happen in those 5 minutes, we do not give permission to anything, for anything or anyone to affect us during that sacred cycle of 60 seconds that passes by us five times, creating 5 minutes. And after that, we have given birth to a creation, whether it's a song, a painting, a poem, maybe not in complete from beginning to end, but maybe we gave birth to a germ of an idea that we put forth. And once those 5 minutes are up, then we have to get back to the business of what some people would call reality. But I think there's a misconception there as well, because the 5 minutes that we use to create is no less real than the reality that we have to return to. Going back to our families, going back to our work. Perhaps our creative work is our professional work. Ideally, that's the case, and I've been tremendously blessed to have my creative work as my profession. So we cannot be in danger of placing reality on one level and things that are beneficial to our spirit and to our soul on a level that is apart from reality, that is separated from it. I think that's dangerous because that robs our creative life of all of those earthy things that make reality a very powerful experience. So because everything is so interconnected and where one is unable, will never live or survive without the other, our art will never survive without reality and vice versa. We can't make those kinds of separations because they're just delusional. When we have, for example, when we have more than 5 minutes, and let's say we have 7 minutes. Actually, the point here is not so much the time, but let's say we have the luxury of distracting ourselves or at least leaving the cubicle of our lives for 7 minutes and be able to completely surround ourselves with some sort of creative activity. And what happens there is that what we have actually made the time ourselves, even though we may not realize it. You know, our boss may have given us an extra 2 or 3 minutes to ourselves, and so we can use those extra minutes to do something creative. But in fact, what happened is that whoever got those 2 or 3 extra minutes to him or herself did something, created the space for those extra minutes to have come into his or her life. In other words, it really is within our control to create that space, to make that time for ourselves. And because it is within our power to do so, that means that we are actually very much enrooted into reality. Because if we have the power to create our space, that means that we are very much, or if not very much, but at least on a very high degree, we're in harmony with reality. Because reality does actually empower us, even when things are incredibly rough and difficult and challenging. That doesn't stop us from having the ability to create our space, to create our time, and to do what we are convinced is the right thing to do. I heard an extraordinary interview earlier this week. This was in Russian. I'm originally Russian, but grew up for the better part of my life in this country. And thanks to my mother and my extraordinary late grandmother, my Russian language has been preserved pretty much intact. So I am fluent in Russian, and that's made me enjoy and be able to do a lot of research about what's happening in the country where I was born, and occasionally when I'm doing some music copying or some more technical aspect of my writing work in music, I sometimes tune into one of the Russian TV channels that we have, and I just happened to tune into an amazing interview that was given by Vladimir Posner, who is a very unique, extraordinary journalist who is actually American, but he lives in Russia and he has one of the most popular TV talk shows there that's just called Posner. And it's broadcast on one of Russia's main television networks on Channel 1. So anyway, his guest last, it was last Sunday evening. His guest was one of the world's greatest opera singers and actually one of the greatest opera singers of all time in all of opera history, Dmitri Khvorostovsky. He is, to opera lovers, he is a household name. But to those of you who have not heard of him, he is just an extraordinary, extraordinary man with a very powerful voice and a bass baritone. And he has basically conquered the world with his voice, with his spirit. And what was extraordinary in this interview was that he made it very clear what the difference is between a musician and an artist. And he didn't do that in a straight shot, obvious way. He was pretty subtle about it. But the point is that the impression that I came out of that show was that being an artist and being a musician are two things which have absolutely nothing to do with each other whatsoever. What I understood was that to be an artist, well, let me interrupt myself and say that being a musician is a much easier thing to understand. It's someone who plays music, and if it's a professional musician, then it's someone who not just makes a living at music, but does it extremely well, or at least well enough to be able to do it professionally. What an artist is something more difficult to pin down with one or two words of definition. And I was really fascinated by what Mr. Khvorostovsky had to say, because he made it incredibly clear, and he took this abstract idea, almost vague kind of idea of what it is to be an artist, and he managed to bring it down to earth in a very, very meaningful kind of way. And what I got from it, or at least the way that I defined for myself what an artist is, it's a person who has a very, very sober and highly conscious evaluation of himself and of what he brings to this world, and knows very well what his place is among others of not just others who are in his similar profession, but just in a much deeper and more philosophical sense, a person who sees himself from the greater distance of being able to recognize his place in a very, very big world. So in other words, what I mean by that is kind of like this. When you're looking at a map, for example, a map of the United States, you can recognize that Massachusetts is on the east, and you can pinpoint California as being on the west. You're looking at the whole picture, and you're able to distinguish one state from another. So you're not just stuck on observing one state, but you're actually distancing yourself just enough so that you're able to see all of the states at once. And I think that an artist has a very similar kind of process. He sees himself not just relative to his own work, but relative to the collective society from which he comes. So that if he were, for example, to look at a map of all of the musicians, let's say a singer, a great artist, if he looks at a map, and when I say map, I mean in a more figurative sense, he looks at this map of many, many, many singers, and there are lots of really fine singers out there. He can recognize his own place very quickly among that huge crowd of singers. But he's also able to recognize other singers very clearly. So he says he can pinpoint and say that, that's Renata Scotto. She's in a certain place of her own in history. He recognizes Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson has his own really unique place in history. So it's what I'm saying is that a true artist has an extremely keen awareness of not just his own work, but of how and where his work fits in the society in which he lives. And that's extremely important and actually pretty rare, because when you really think about it, we can find that the world has no shortage of extraordinary musicians and artists of all kinds. But I should say artists, I mean painters. I should say painters, poets, ballet dancers, all of the people who are in the arts. There is a giant, giant amount of really exceptional artists in that sense. But artists in the grander sense, an artist in the sense that I was just talking about a few moments ago, those kinds of artists are actually not that many in the world. There are really very few of them. And this great singer, Dmitri Hvorostovsky, is certainly one of them. He has such a brilliant sense of this world, and you could also tell that he on the one hand, he went through just extraordinary challenges in developing his craft, and one can see if one is sensitive enough, one can detect that he endured some really serious hardships to get where he managed to get. But at the same time, he was also extremely fortunate, as he recounted it. He talked about himself in this interview, I would say, in a very, very modest and reserved kind of way, mostly in answers to the questions that Vladimir Posner was asking him. I wouldn't say that Chorostovsky is the kind of man who very generously offers a lot of information about himself. He's not that way at all. But at the same time, I don't think you could say that he's introverted either, because he's a very, very expressive man. He's just superbly balanced with what he reveals about himself, and balanced in really just every way that he communicates. And I was just incredibly impressed with how of his extraordinary sense of responsibility, and the responsibility that comes with the ownership that he has of this incredible career that he has had. He is totally unspoiled, totally unaffected by unaffected in a negative way by his incredible superstar success, and at the same time, it's very clear that this is a man who treasures his success, who does not take for granted anything that came his way. Another thing I wanted to share about him that was interesting was that he claimed that he is a pessimist, which was very, very strange and interesting, because listening to him, you don't get the impression that he is a pessimist. I would agree with my mom that he maybe was... that he meant more of that he is a realist, and maybe a realist in like a hyper realist, but that he's not really a pessimist. When Vladimir Posner challenged him on that question, he did not deny that he is a pessimist, and in fact he even said that it's partly thanks to my pessimism that I've been able to achieve all that I've done, because he explained that he expected absolutely nothing from anyone, and that he really had very, very minimal expectations of any kind, and that attitude empowered him to take his own development in even more into his own hands without being dependent on external circumstances. As it happened, external circumstances did favor him a lot, and he had an extraordinary training. He was blessed with marvelous teachers, and his first great success came in, I think it was in 1989, when he won the BBC Cardiff Singers Competition, and that was an incredible victory, because he came out of Russia to compete in England, and England had its own series of emerging singers who were on their way, on their ways of becoming stars, and Mr. Chvorostovsky beat them. This singer from Siberia completely shook the stage with his singing, and as they say, the rest is history. So I'm still under a really profound impression of this incredible interview. Let's take a short break and listen to a piece I wrote. This is called Diary Entry Number 2. Welcome back to our show. This is Julian Lampert sitting in for Lena Miermond on the Lena Live Show. It's about 1:30. It's actually exactly 1:34 Pacific time. And I am broadcasting to you from New York, where it's 4:34 in Eastern Standard Time. We are faced with some gloomy winter weather on our end. It's quite cold. I think it's about on the freezing level. And I understand that most listeners are from the California area, and that is certainly a different planet from where we are here in New York, with your incredible weather pretty much all year round. We were just talking about the interview I heard with the extraordinary bass baritone Dmitri Chvorostovsky. He is one of the greatest singers of all time. And I was just, during the music that we just heard, I was thinking about what I consider myself, or I should say, how do I consider myself an artist? And it's a very difficult question to answer, because I'm certainly I'm not yet, I would say, evolved to the degree that Mr. Chvorostovsky is to answer that question. But my feeling and my music has really largely been this way. My feeling is that it's extremely important to have as much as one can afford to have a balance between this very narrow path of being focused and concentrated in one's artistic, in one's musical direction or literary or painting direction of painting, whichever art we pursue. Medicine is an art. I mean, anything, really anything can be an art if it's about doing it as well as possible. And I was thinking, returning to the idea of balance, that there has to be a balance, and it's a very delicate one, between this narrow path where we're concentrated on our specific craft, while also being very open and looking beyond our narrow path at what is going on around us. And that's not an easy balance to maintain, because some people, for some people, they get lost, sucked up too heavily in one direction at the expense of the other, and that's that's a very common and very easy trap to follow into, because when we, for example, when we become inspired by some idea, let's say it's a tune that comes to our head that we want to write down on paper, a song that we suddenly, just out of a burst of inspiration, a song that we want to write, there is a danger of getting all absorbed in writing this song to a point where our third eye, or our sixth sense, which is about receiving signals from outside of our narrow path, is in danger of shutting down or becoming less sensitive. And we end up being completely isolated and stuck in this cocoon of just writing out our song, or living almost obliviously in our inspiration. And it's very difficult, because for that category of people, they do not depend on external influences or external circumstances to be inspired. In fact, one practice that unfortunately is being lost in our day, and it's really, really sad. But it's extremely important to do this. It's the practice of being very, very regimented about creative work. Meaning, for example, from 10 o'clock to 10:30 every single day in the morning, I'm going to paint. And making that kind of resolution is sacred, because after you've committed to painting every single day from 10 to 10:30, you've basically made an agreement, a covenant with between you and yourself. And hopefully, if you're faithful and honest enough to follow that covenant, that agreement, you will find yourself in front of a canvas painting every day for, I don't know, however time you agreed, for a month, 6 months, whatever that time frame is, you will find yourself painting every single day from 10 to 10:30. Now, the beauty of that is that you are not dependent, you are not enslaved to being inspired. So in other words, you paint whether you are inspired to paint or you're not. You may not be inspired to paint, but that should not stop you. You must not allow that to stop you from painting. And that's a really beautiful exercise, because you get into a process where you often may find yourself, you know, it's 9:55, in 5 minutes I have to get to the canvas, and you may feel like you're totally uninspired. You may not even want to paint at all. And then as you're painting, you are more and more inspired, and somehow your spirit is becoming transformed to a point where you're actually enjoying what you're doing. Just the physical act, the sheer physical act of having that brush in your hand and stroking that brush against the canvas becomes so enjoyable that you are actually creating a painting. And that's an incredibly powerful process, because just 5 or 10 minutes earlier, you did not want to paint. You were feeling totally uninspired, and the last thing you wanted to do was to paint. And there is no amount of money or even I would say a skill. You cannot even learn that kind of a skill from a teacher. It's a purely internal process that just completely transforms totally transforms your character. And I think that that's another component that artists, the great artists have, is that they do not depend on just their moods and how they feel when it comes to creation. They understand and feel that it's something that's much larger than themselves, and they basically are able to lose themselves in a very extraordinary way, lose themselves in such a way where the result is an incredibly meaningful and beautiful creative process. To what extent can that be taught? Many people and a lot of teachers actually claim that that cannot be taught, that's something that only that's a skill that a person can only develop within himself. And I think that is true only partly. And the whole idea of a self-taught artist, that's also very, very misunderstood and not correctly talked about, because in every case where a great artist of some kind made his or her place in history. And again, when I say a great artist, I mean either a musician, a painter, a writer, scientist, a doctor. There will always have been, in every case, at least one person, just one person is all it takes, who had a strong enough influence on the individual to go into a particular direction that eventually ended up in that individual emerging as a great artist. So, in other words, there's no such thing as dropping a person as a baby in the middle of a desert with no people, and for that baby to grow up just on his own without any other beings around him, and just mysteriously becoming an incredible singer or an incredible painter, that will never happen. The person has to be born among other people, has to be in a family, in a society, has to be in some kind of environment where there are other people around him. And it's as a result of direct influences or indirect influences that that person eventually becomes an artist. So it's a very complicated and mysterious kind of process. Let's take another short break and listen to another short piece of mine called Phonochrome. This is for two pianos. We just heard Phonochromes for two pianos. That's a piece that I wrote for a pair of extraordinary artists. Talk about artists. Ludmila and Oleg Protopopov, twice gold medalists as figure skaters in the Olympic Games. And gold, they also were world champions numerous times. They are certainly one of the greatest artists of all times. Just absolutely extraordinary individuals who who were born into an incredible period of history, very, very challenging and dramatic times during the Soviet era, when the Cold War was at its peak. And here were these glorious figure skaters who basically broke all borders and conquered the world with their totally indescribable art. And they just went completely beyond the ice when they were dancing and transported everyone to a totally different world, a world which did not recognize any borders, any politics. And I'm just incredibly grateful to know and love these two extraordinary people. My name is Julian Lampert, and I'm sitting in for Lena Miermont, who is your usual host at this time of the Lena Live Show. As a final thought before wrapping up our episode today, I hope that in talking about what makes an artist, that whoever you may be as a listener and whatever work it is that you do, I hope that you may realize that it really does not matter what kind of work you do or what kind of profession you have. To be an artist is an ability. It's something that is in everyone's hands to become. I think as long as a person is very passionate and you might say, without any shame, has the conviction of expressing himself or herself as fully as possible, but at the same time, knowing exactly the kind of world that he or she is living in, and being able to express yourself to that world in such a way that your community or your family or perhaps a much larger audience, doesn't matter what the size of the audience is, if your audience understands and embraces your conviction, then that certainly makes you an artist through and through. And if the people around you do not accept your convictions and do not understand you, then that also still makes you an artist, because, as I said, it does not matter what the size of your audience is. if you are happy, it all depends on what satisfies you and what you feel nourished with. So if you feel fulfilled by expressing yourself to just one person, it may be in a relationship or with someone in your family, then that act of communicating what is within you and projecting it, conveying it to someone who is outside of yourself, that right there is a very powerful artistic process. So I think the world can, in that sense, the world can definitely use a lot more artists, because we need to communicate with each other in ways that are reflective of exactly how we feel, but in ways that are also sensitive and mindful of how others feel. And on that note, I say goodbye. It's 3 minutes to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 3 minutes to 2 p.m. Pacific Time. I want to thank all the folks at BBS once again, to Doug and Don Newsome, that dynamic duo who make all of our shows possible. And I love working with them. And I love working with all of you, our audience, who make their time to absorb all that we have to say, our music, our words, and everything that we have to express in this world. Goodbye, and until next time.